Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Again, Dwight not here, just one of those routine sometimes gets the better of me, but well, you know where we are headed after this. Well, obviously after all exchanging all the pleasantries, we are now diving into the global events, and boy do we have something awesome going on at Davos. Davos is it's this place that I have never been to, but I don't like the place already, because annually a bunch of rich guys gather there. Basically they gather every year in Davos to talk about how they are going to solve things like, look, I'm okay with them talking about how to solve things like climate change, you know, how to better build, better industries, AI and all that stuff. But the fact that they talk about how to solve things like poverty, the question I keep asking myself is, when last was any of this guy broke? Actually, point of correction. When last was, who was the last family member in the generation of the past 100 years? In the family member of most, if not all of these guys broke. Short answer is maybe about 100 years ago. Now, you have to understand that, about 90 to 80% of the guys that are attending these events, especially in Davos, these guys are not, I have a golf, are rich. These guys are, I have so many yachts, I don't know which one to take today, rich. And I also, well, found out that, a yacht is an easy way to launder money. Like, I think this is one of those things that, this is one of the reasons why I like rich people. Everything they do revolves around how to steal money. And this is not because I have, I have a pair of Nike shoes rich, or I have an iPhone and I have Vrupa rich. Oh no. Like, rich. Old money aesthetics rich. You know, they have this, saying that, old money, new money is loud. Old money whispers. There are people that, there are people that pay to be on the, on Forbes top 100 richest men on earth. And there are people that pay not to be on the list. Like, they're so rich and they want to remain anonymous with their money that they will just tell the guys that like to compile a list of rich people annually. Now, you know what? I'm going to give you this amount of money so you cannot put my name on that list. And then you have those ones that, those ones are more often old money rich. The new money rich are the ones that are saying, you know what? Can I be on that list, please? I'll give you this amount of money. I know that I wouldn't make the cut if we're just relying on merit, but I want to be on that list. So please, thank you. But that's not what we are actually here to talk about. What we had to talk about is why this world is slowly running out of conspiracy theorists. Because everything that a lot of conspiracy theorists have been saying for like 100 years is now coming out into, it's now making headlines in mainstream media. And it's fascinating. Some of us are having a good time. So, where is this coming from? For those of you that have been following what's going on in Davos, then you know that, Mark Carney, the current Prime Minister of Canada, gave one heck of a speech. In total is about 15 minutes. Like, that's the part that's somewhat, having more shots that are fired towards, the direction of America. We did mention, America, but they don't, No. The Board of War is this institution that was, the brainchild of Donald Trump, from the look of things, Stephen Miller, I think, at this point. Is the one that is, supposedly, set up to run for about 2 years with the United Nations approval to oversee the reconstruction of the Gaza Strip. What's fascinating is that, the country that is, supposedly spearheading the whole, organization, or more like sub-organization, is the one that supplied the guy that bombed the country, the Gaza Strip, to smithereens. Now, this confusion you have here, I mean, this is the problem. The U.S. supplied much, if not all, the weapons to Israel that had been used into the obliteration of Gaza. Now they are the same guys that actually met, was that last year in November, at the United Nations Security Council and said, you know what, we would like to come up with a brilliant idea to bring about not only a peace, you know, not only peace in Gaza, but also rebuild the whole thing from the ground up. Okay, why did he just supply the guy that bombed the place in the first place? This confusion here, you are not the first one to have that confusion. You are not. Now, I have a series of audio here that I have for you that actually point to, we will get to McCain's speech later. Let's start with why I'm saying whatever he said in that speech. It's not, none of it is news. It's as old as time, but the way that people are treating it, oh my God. Oh, did he just say that? Yeah. I'll give you an example. One of the things that McCain said basically in summary is that, the whole speech can be summarized in a, you know, in one way. That for a very long time, for basically 80, make it, 70 to 80 years for the whole international law-based order, a lot of countries have known, and a lot of countries and individuals have known that international law is not equally applied. It's applied in terms of benefits to others more than to some. And in terms of holding people accountability, it's much easier to hold others accountable than other. I'll give you an example here again. Now, y'all remember the whole South Africa. Was that the 2015? Was that the 2015 African, you know, African Union summit that took place in South Africa? And the then president, wanted at the time by the ICC, Omar al-Bashir, attended that event. And the whole world went bananas to South Africa to tell South Africa, you are here, you have an international obligation to arrest that man. And they didn't. And homeboy hopped on a plane and then went back to, you know, went back to Sudan. And now South Africa was being cooked here. Like, you are just not following international law here. You are supposed to arrest that man because you have, you are a signatory to the Rome Statute. And at this point, I think it's safe to, do you have any idea how crazy sometimes you have to be to agree with something Jacob Zuma said? This is the guy that couldn't pronounce numbers. And Jacob Zuma was like, yeah, nah, I'm not falling for that crap. And was he wrong? And for a very long time, ever since the implementation of the International Criminal Court, a lot of developing countries, most of which, well, including African developing countries, have been complaining about how how international law is applied by the international, Criminal Court, in a sense that the implications being that Gaddafi, let's get him. Helmut in Namibia, let's get him. Tony Blair for bombing the heck out, for assisting, and Bush for combining their military forces and bombing the heck out of Iraq and Libya. The only consequences they had to face was an apology in case of Tony Blair. Bush is still making jokes out of it. Now, it took about, less than a month for the ICC to, to put out an arrest warrant for the Russian president. You wanna find out how long it took for them to put out, and the hassle and the hoops they had to jump through to have one for the Israeli prime minister. We're all equal before the law, my behind. That's not how the world works. That's not how the world works. Now, you and I will be given to, you would be forgiven to, for being naive enough to think that international law is applied. I mean, it's that black and white. If you invade a country, you will be investigated by the UN. If they have good enough evidence, you will be taken to The Hague for a trial by the ICC or the ICJ. If you're an individual, you think it's that black and white. No, it's not. Again, I'm saying you'll be forgiven for thinking like that because you won't be the first to think like that. And Angelina Jolie thought the same way. Well, I'm serious. She actually has the thought that international law is black and white in its application. After 20 years of working in the humanitarian space, she learned that, that's not how it works. And she actually had to throw in a towel. And in 2023 December, she had an interview. You know, she had an interview with a Turkish journalist and filmmaker, where she said something that I'm going to share with you in a few. First of all, let's take a break. Today I'm going to do a lot of talking, but I'll also give I'm just here today to prove that what Mark Carney said at Davos has been said for a very long time by a lot of people that were not prime ministers. Well, that makes sense. But let's start with Angelina Jolie, who came to that realization and actually came to that realization during her time, she worked with the UN, especially UNICEF for an extended period of time. Overall, she was in the humanitarian space for about 20 years. Actually, exactly 20 years. Yeah. Oh, breakfast. Not my break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Right. Everything is set. Now, let's ask the question here. During his speech at the 2026 World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos, the current Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney, said something, gave one heck of a speech that has gone viral at this point with regards to basically pointing out at the hypocrisy with which international law has been applied and how a lot of countries and individuals have known about this unequal application, or more like unequal application of the law, and they decided to shut up because they did not want to threaten their private or collective interest. You know, the guys that were on the quote unquote good side of international law, depending on which side you describe as good. Now, McKinney is pointing out that his country is one of those countries that knew that international law was not as equal in application as everyone was led to believe. Now, because of that speech, everyone is going, oh my God, why are we finding out this? No, this is not something new. Let's go first to 2023, and then we'll come to 2024, and then, 2023, Angelina Jolie, interview, and then we'll come to 2024, Anthony Blinken, 2024 Munich Security Conference. Anthony Blinken's words from the 2024 Munich Security Conference. He also said something interesting. Actually, part of Anthony Blinken's speech was quoted by the Canadian Prime Minister in his recent speech in Davos. That's my favorite part. But let's start with Angelina Jolie. Let's start with a question. Angelina Jolie, you have been in the humanitarian space for about 20 plus years. Actually, exactly 20 years. What have you observed with regards to how international law is applied globally? Is it applied as equal as we are often taught in schools, including law schools, embarrassing enough? On your mark, set, ready. Angelina Jolie, please take it away.
I think I thought at least even 20 years ago when I started to work internationally that there was this, in my head, some weird idea of good guys. You know, some idea of those, whether it be certain countries or certain peoples, maybe it was this holdover from World War II and this thought that this was like, so that the lines were clearer and that there was going to be these human rights goals laid out and that there would be things stood up for, and that if these things weren't done, there would be pushback, and these were the way, and I really thought that's what it was. I even thought that's what the United Nations was. And I thought, okay, there's some lines in the sand. There's some understanding, and we're going to grow and fight for improvements in these areas. And to watch and understand more and more how it's just simply, that's not what it is. That's not the world. The world is not, these are human rights. It is, these are human rights sometimes for these people, maybe sometimes for these people, never for these people. Yeah. It's food aid, 6% for these people, 50% for these people. It's justice for these people, but not these people. Accountability for this crime, but not that crime if there's business interest. And this is truly the ugly state of so much of the world that we are just becoming more and more aware of. It's really disheartening. It's really upsetting. I think we
thank you very much, Angelina Jolie. It's disheartening and it's painful. But she chose her words carefully there. Not in a sense that, you know, to avoid offending someone, but the way that she basically describes her experience and the realization with regards to how international law has been applied ever since the founding of the United Nations was like 81 this year ago. One of the awesome words she used was, it's really not the case. Before finding herself in the humanitarian space, she thought that was the case. 20 years in the humanitarian space, she was like, yeah, nothing can be further from the truth. It's not the case. There are laws for these people, but not those ones. There are, there's accountability for those people, but not those ones if there are business interests involved. Well, on the 3rd of January, we witnessed exactly that. The U.S. went contrary to the second article of the U.N. Charter and stormed into a fellow U.N. member states and also U.N., FIFA member and kidnapped the president. Contrary, bombing a bunch of people, bombing the capital and killing some people and damaging infrastructure. Against international law. You don't have to go deeper in the UN Charter. Just the second article is the one that says, that basically points out that, military conflict should be something of the last resort. Sit and talk things out. In other words, the UN is basically saying grow up. And Trump was like, yeah, no, we have the army. I mean, we can just go and bomb the heck, whatever the heck we want. And where that's coming from? We can just go in there and, bomb whoever the heck we want because we are a superpower. Here's the thing. In his interview with, I think it was CNN, the current advisor White House Deputy Chief of Staff, Stephen Miller, said, well, the U.S. is a superpower, and under Donald Trump, it will conduct itself as such. In other words, mighty is always going to be right. What is wrong or right is not what international law is going to determine. No. What we are going to classify as right is going to be right. What we are going to classify as wrong is going to be wrong. Who we are going to classify as the good guy is going to be the good guy. Who we are going to classify as the bad guy is going to be the bad guy. In other words, we are going to define terms because we have the strongest army. Yebo. Welcome to the reality of international law. But anyway, in its application, look, on paper, you should look at the UN Charter. On paper, the English is spotless. All the commas and full stops and capital letters are all in the right place. Except the application of those words in the real world. Anyway, up next, Anthony Blinken. Now, that's the former Secretary of State under Biden, Anthony Blinken. Now, he was attending, this was in 2024, he was attending the Munich Security Conference. Now, Anthony Blinken, walk us through how the, just summarize in very, very simple American English terms, how does international law operate? How does international law operate?
If you're not at the table in the international system, you're going to be on the menu.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blinken. We'll take it from here. If you are not at the table, you'll be on the menu. In other words, it's either you are part of the small group or with a strong military army that are running everything, or you are going to be one of those guys that they are going to bully to get well, their resources. It's, well, it's all about resources. It's not rocket science at this point. Now, that statement, it turns out, has a much deeper meaning. Now, that deeper meaning is the one that, there's a much longer interpretation of it. And that's the one that I'm just, almost had a heart attack there. Now, it's not rocket science here. What's going on here is, this is where my English now, MTC must start with a timbre, but for English, because my English is now just not Englishing. Now, what's going on here is if you are not on the menu, if you are not at the table, you are going to be on the menu. What the heck does that just mean? Well, Anthony Blinken, please explain more. Except he didn't, he went on to explain, why they had to intervene in a lot of, in a lot of places that had basically Chinese presence, because China is the threat, not you and I. You and I must just sit here and chill. There's a boy, I hate this. There's a part of that speech. There's a part of Anthony Blinken's speech. I actually just got myself awesome, excellent. Found it. Now, when responding to the moderator's question during the Munich Security Conference, Anthony Blinken, who was the U.S. Secretary of State under Biden, said the following: if you are not at the table in the international system, you are going to be on the menu. Translated into Chinese, the meaning is akin to. We will continue after the break.
At ShopRite, we're helping you make your money go further with our wide range of back-to-school savings. Save big on essentials like 72-page A4 college feint and margin exercise book for just $4.99, 80 GSM 250 sheets Typek A4 photostat paper for only $54.99, and 2x40 gram Stadler glue stick value pack for a low $39.99. Valid until 8 February 2026. Shop more. Or back to school savings only at ShopRite.
Tune in to the Home Run.
Tune in to Home Run. Helm do it. Blah blah blah. We don't have a lot of time now. If you are not on the menu, if you are not on the table, you are on the menu. Turns out the Chinese has their own interpretation of that statement. Translated into Chinese, the meaning is one that is similar to, if you are not the knife and the chopping board, you will be the fish and the meat on the board being chopped. That being chopped is just the seasoning I decided to add on to. I'm black. I can't help it. Seasoning is what we do. I'm not from the Netherlands. Turns out the Dutch are very good at cooking. Opposite is very true. Their food is one of the food that is heavily criticized around the world for looking not very seasoned. Now, translated into Chinese, the meaning is akin to if you are not the knife and the chopping board, you will be the fish and the meat on the chopping board. As the chief diplomat of the superpower, Blinken's use of this phrase reveals a worldview characterized by harsh and chilling perspective of a world where the strong prey on the week. That was in 2024. And y'all are surprised now that the Canadian Prime Minister said all that stuff. Because I'm not. You know, this is the reason, this is why I always tell people, guys, read history. I was here in January, actually, early January. We are still in January. I'm that broke. She's, you know, that's why I'm just wishing for February at this point. Now, that's why I was here explaining that this whole kidnapping of President Maduro on the 3rd of January is not, well, does not shock me. And I went in to explain why it doesn't shock me. Because on the same day in 1990, on the same day, the 3rd of January, the U.S. did it again, kidnapped a nation's leader. That was, call it a dictator, military junta, you know, whatever you want, of Panama. Manuel Noriega. They kidnapped the homeboy, the very same way, say, very same date. They kidnapped, same month, same continent, they kidnapped, Maduro. Also same charges, the one for drugs. You know. Except with Noriega, the CIA and Noriega were homies until he decided, you know, not to play ball, and then they started, you know, accusationing him with a, I knew this English was going to come and bite me in the behind. But they have it. Angelina Jolie said it in December of 2023. And one of my favorite quotes from, who is this, from the scholar and linguist Noam Chomsky is that if the Nuremberg laws were to apply all U.S. presidents post Cold War, I believe he said, would be indicted. In other words, all U.S. presidents post, is it post Cold War, post World War II, would be in The Hague standing trial if the Nuremberg laws really applied. Translation, they don't apply in ways that they are preached to apply. Talking is easy, oh, is very easy, but thereby doing, you know. One of the funniest, you know, jokes. Now this is me putting on my comedian head. Just a second, please, just a second. That there's one of the jokes coming out of the online relationships that, the way people say talk online. The day we'll meet, I will show you flames. And then they meet 5 seconds, homeboy is snoring. Like I said, you see, this is not just in politics; it's everywhere. Talk is easy, thereby doing. Doing is not easy. It's not easy. So, if you are not on the table, you are on the menu. 2023, actually 2024. 2023, Angelina Jolie was like, "I thought this is how international law works," and boy, did I learn that. Was I wrong the whole time? And it took the poor, wonderful actor 20 years to learn that lesson. Like, you know what? You can't solve these problems. Because there's a lot of money involved. Solving these problems will mean threatening a lot of people's profits and bank accounts. Therefore, you are not solving these problems. One such example that I like to use is of one African, you know, call it, is it African or Cameroonian businessman? Who's it? Now, was that in 2021 or 2022? When President Gengop, I think, attended an event of one guy that is, attended an event of, attended an event in South Africa where I'm not sure if this guy was there or it was the event. He was also given some type of a prize that was coming from an organization that was founded by Africa Energy Chamber. Yes, found it. Africa Energy Chamber. Yeah, well, a lot of local media here in Namibia criticized President Gengop for accepting that award from Africa Energy Chamber in South Africa. Why? It's because, well, Nje Ayuk is one guy who has a very questionable reputation because he's a millionaire, billionaire. Now, before he became that, he was just a wonderful lawyer trying to help mankind until in 2015 he found himself in Darfur working for the United Nations, I believe. And the Darfur region at this point was just, it was a hot place, militarily. It was a hot place. Yeah. A couple of years of working there trying to help people here and there, he learned that, yeah, no, you can't solve this conflict. Why? Because there is a lot of profit involved. A homeboy got out of there and literally wrote a book titled, There Are Billions at Stake. Translation, this is a multi-billion dollar war. Solving it will mean you stopping a lot of people from making their billions. Now, at this point, it's very easy to criticize Western countries and the way that they apply their, you know, partially apply, you know, international law and how they are willing to sponsor terrorists to overthrow governments. That was the Obama administration and the Syria, you know, the Assad regime and Operation Timber Sycamore. It's public knowledge. You can read about it on your own. Now, homeboy just decided from the look of things to stop helping and then joined the group of guys that were making billions and now he's filthy rich. Translation, fight if you can't win, join them. And join them he did. So, there are a lot of people that have, you know, that woke up from the naivety of thinking that, you know what? The law is going to protect you. No. Where international law can't protect you, you have to protect yourself. Speaking of which, actually that's part of Mark Carney's speech. Now, the following speech is a very long one. It's 15 minutes. And I will have to actually pause from time to time to basically point out a few things. It's gonna be one heck of a ride, but fasten a seatbelt. But before that, let's just, let's take a break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Now, welcome back. Now, for those of you that are shocked, still shocked, or shocketed by what the Canadian Prime Minister said at Davos during the 2026 annual World Economic Forum meeting. I just took you through Anthony Blinken's, I don't want to say speech because that's just a snippet of a speech. That was in 2024. Angelina Jolie realized that in 2023. Actually, some of us realized that in 2022. In 2022? Nah, not 2022. Actually, I realized that in 2015 while reading Jeremy Scahill's, was that Blake Waters? The American journalist, Blackwater's, Blackwater's is in the private military army run by Eric Prince. I'm not sure if Eric Prince is still in charge or that private military army is still working. He's still in operation. That book woke me up. That was in 2015 and I used to read that book in the library in Arandes. I remember that one vividly. Actually, that's where I started preparing for Eagle FM. I should have known. I would have come much sooner for a command that was founded in 2019. Yeah. Really? Huh. Interesting. But now let's go to Angelina. Not Angelina Jolie went through that. MTC, please look into Tamba, but for English, because my English here is not Englishing. Mark any speech.
It seems that every day we're reminded that we live in an era of great power rivalry. that the rules-based order is fading, that the strong can do what they can and the weak must suffer what they must. And this aphorism of Thucydides is presented as inevitable, as the natural logic of international relations reasserting itself. And faced with this logic,
he said, every day we are coming to the realization, which is why I started with the previous audios of people pointing out exactly what he was, he's basically summarized. People have been realizing the impartial application of international law. Developing countries have always complained, especially those in Africa. There are a lot of, actually one of my favorite videos of the International Criminal Court being asked the, one of the questions they probably don't like at this point. Does the International Criminal Court target African leaders? That was back when, when Mehdi Hassan was still with Al Jazeera. Had that discussion with Moreno Ocampos, who was the first, I think, chief prosecutor of the ICC. And, my homeboy dodged a lot of questions, but knowing Mehdi Hassan, he drilled the answers out of him. But let's continue. A lot of people are coming to the realization. And thanks to Mark Kenney's speech in Davos, a lot of people have now just realized what we have been realizing for a very long time now. Well, better late than never. Mark Kenney, please.
There is a strong tendency for countries to go along to get along.
Translation, if you don't want to get your behind kicked, side with the bully. And a lot of countries have always sided with the bully. We don't want to mention any names because he didn't mention Trump in that speech, in the very same way that the UN Charter doesn't mention democracy. Like, I swear, the whole document doesn't mention, not a single mention of the word democracy in that. Which still baffles me to this day. But anyway.
To accommodate. To avoid trouble. To hope that compliance will buy safety. Well, it won't. So what are our options? In 1978, the Czech dissident Václav Havel, later president, wrote an essay called The Power of the Powerless. And in it, he asked a simple question: how did the communist system sustain itself? And his answer began with a greengrocer. Every morning, this shopkeeper places a sign in his window, "Workers of the world unite." He doesn't believe it. No one does. But he places the sign anyway to avoid trouble, to signal compliance, to get along. And because every shopkeeper on every street does the same, the system persists. Not through violence alone, but through the participation of ordinary people in rituals they privately know to be false. Havel called this living within a lie. The system's power comes not from its truth, but from everyone's willingness to perform as if it were true. And its fragility comes from the same source. When even one person stops performing, when the greengrocer removes his sign, the illusion begins to crack.
Now, I'm one of those people that have reached the conclusion that the only reason it's being pointed out by a lot of Western countries when it comes to the hegemonic application of international law by the US is because they have shifted from the benefiting end to the receiving end because of the whole tension over Greenland. That's the only reason. When they were just benefiting, they didn't complain. They were quick to say, let's just go ahead and do this. This is the only way things should be done. Now that it's beginning to slowly bite them through Greenland, all of a sudden they are pointing at it. The application here is not fair. Really? You're only finding out now? Now, part of the military coalition that bombed the heck out of Libya, Canada was a part of it. European countries were there. Now, the German Prime Minister, the current German Prime Minister also gave a speech that was somewhat similar to this one, but there's a lot of SpongeBob-ish in a way that Humber is just repeating himself more than I could just keep up. It became monotonous with time, but sure. Translation, when they were benefiting, Now, they were benefiting, so they didn't say anything. So now that they are not benefiting from the system that was oppressing others and benefiting them, we're like, you know what? All of a sudden, there's something wrong with it. I swear this planet is awesome to observe, to live in. That's a little debatable.
Friends, it is time for companies and countries to take their signs down.
Now that we are not benefiting, now that the system is biting us, please, we are willing to stand for and go against it. Really, Prime Minister? I know you just took over from Justin Trudeau, who last time I checked went viral with Katy Perry on a yacht. That's his life. But anyway, seriously, I was like, really? You couldn't find some privacy? And also, you people with cameras, you like to look at people's lives. Just let people, let prime ministers and celebrities have a good time. Actually, celebrities, who cares?
4 decades.
It took Angelina Jolie 20 years to realize that international law is not applied as equal as it is more often taught in the real world. It's not applied like that. It took Canada 80 years, 4 decades. It took Canada 80 years to learn that. Really? I'm more pissed at those of you that are shocked than I am at the guys or whoever wrote that speech.
For decades, countries like Canada prospered under what we called the rules-based international order. For decades, countries like Canada prospered under what we called the rules-based international order. We joined its institutions, we praised its principles, we benefited from its predictability. And because of that, we could pursue values-based foreign policies under its protection. We knew the story of the international rules-based order was partially false. That the strongest would exempt themselves when convenient. That trade rules were enforced asymmetrically. And we knew that international law applied with varying rigor depending on the identity of the accused or the victim.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an arrest warrant for the Russian president for invading Ukraine. There's none for Bush for invading Iraq. You're welcome. And also there's none for Trump for bombing the heck out of Venezuela. Yeah.
This fiction was useful. And American hegemony in particular helped provide public goods, open sea lanes, a stable financial system, collective security, and support for frameworks for resolving disputes. So we placed the sign in the window. We participated in the rituals, and we largely avoided calling out the gaps between rhetoric and reality. This bargain no longer works.
Aha! That explains why you are telling us about it. Because it no longer works. Because when it worked, you didn't point at it. This is a very harsh world we live in. A very harsh one. So, if you are not at the table, you are on the menu. According to the Westerns. According to the Easterns, especially the Chinese. The equivalent of that phrase is, if you are not the knife or the chopping board, then you are the fish or the vegetable or the meat that's being chopped on that chopping board.
Let me be direct. We are in the midst of a rupture, not a transition. Over the past 2 decades, a series of crises in finance, health, energy, and geopolitics have laid bare the risks of extreme global integration. But more recently, great powers have begun using economic integration as weapons. Tariffs as leverage, financial infrastructure as coercion, supply chains as vulnerabilities to be exploited. You cannot live within the lie of mutual benefit through integration when integration becomes the source of your subordination. The multilateral institutions on which the middle powers have relied, the WTO, the UN, the COP, the architecture, the very architecture of collective problem solving are under threat. And as a result, many countries are drawing the same conclusions, that they must develop greater strategic autonomy in energy, food, critical minerals, in finance and supply chains. And this impulse is understandable. A country that can't feed itself, fuel itself, or defend itself has few options.
Ain't that the truth? You are, whoever feeds you controls you. That's a reminder. That's a very, that's a very common quote.
When the rules no longer protect you, you must protect yourself.
When the rules no longer protect you, you must protect yourself. Oh boy, that is my favorite part of the speech. Because I think for the better part of the end of last year and the beginning of this year, it wasn't until last year, I think, when I came to the conclusion that forget international law if you want to survive on this planet. Build an army. Again, the Chinese realized this after their 100 years of humiliation. They were, after every military defeat, they were forced to sign one-sided treaties that led with them, that ended up with them losing Hong Kong. For 100 years, the British ran Hong Kong. Based on an agreement that was signed, a very lopsided one, because it was signed shortly after the British and the French bombed the heck out of the Chinese. What negotiation strength do you think they had in that negotiation? They didn't have any. So they were like, you know what, diplomacy doesn't work here. Just build an army. Now the Chinese have an army, a very strong military presence to defend their country. They don't have a strong military presence around the world to basically bully everyone around, like some people won't mention. But the thing is, they have a strong military presence and military research and development to protect themselves from bullies. That's the only way to go. And Africa is still going, you know what? Some countries I won't mention are still stuck on enemy to none and friend all. Not mentioning any names, of course, we are being professional here. But back to McKinney.
But let's be clear-eyed about where this leads. A world of fortresses will be poorer, more fragile, and less sustainable. And there's another truth. If great powers abandon even the pretense of rules and values for the unhindered pursuit of their power and interests, the gains from transactionalism will become harder to replicate. Hegemons cannot continually monetize their relationships. Allies will diversify to hedge against uncertainty. They'll buy insurance, increase options, in order to rebuild sovereignty. Sovereignty that was once grounded in rules but will increasingly be anchored in the ability to withstand pressure. This room knows this is classic risk management. Risk management comes at a price. But that cost of strategic autonomy, of sovereignty, can also be shared. Collective investments in resilience are cheaper than everyone building their own fortresses. Shared standards reduce fragmentations. Complementarities are positive sum.
That somewhat of divestment in both economic and diplomatic relations that was just pointed out there. We have a very good example here at home. Last year, the Bank of Namibia announced that we are looking into investing into having our own gold reserves. Why? Well, to shield our economy from external shocks, economic shocks, because it has become very unpredictable. And actually, that's also a very brilliant move, considering 2008 financial crisis. That was caused by a bunch of private guys who were just who made one terrible financial decision after another in the private sphere. And when that bubble busted, the housing bubble, as they called it, when it busted, it impoverished a lot of poor people, of already struggling people across the planet. And those guys were not even held accountable. So it's not very. It's a very understandable concern to start thinking the way that Namibia is thinking in terms of investing into a gold reserve to try and shield its economy from external shocks. Because, well, there are a bunch of guys there that are just making decisions because they woke up, you know, on the wrong side of the bed. So you don't have control over what's happening in their country. But you can, you know, you can do something to protect yourself from the stupidity of their decisions by making sure that you have enough cushions in your country for your economy to land on after their terrible decision blows in their face. And the splinters head, you know, head your direction. We continue.
And the question for middle powers like Canada is not whether to adapt to the new reality. We must. The question is whether we adapt by simply building higher walls or whether we can do something more ambitious. Now, Canada was amongst the first to hear the wake-up call, leading us to fundamentally shift our strategic posture. Canadians know that our old comfortable assumptions that our geography and alliance memberships automatically conferred prosperity and security, that assumption is no longer valid. And our new approach rests on what Alexander Stubb, the president of Finland, has termed value-based realism. Or to put another way, we aim to be both principled and pragmatic. Principled in our commitment to fundamental values, sovereignty, territorial integrity, the prohibition of the use of force except when consistent with the UN Charter, and respect for human rights.
I have two places, Caracas, the capital of Venezuela, and Gaza, throws that part of the speech out through the window. I know Caracas is, you know, it's more of a unanimous US thing, but Gaza, oh, Canada is a way hands deep into that. But just because of that speech, Donald Trump decided, you know what? You know that board of war invitation, board of peace that I gave you last time? Because of that speech that you gave in Davos, huh? Oh yeah, I take it back. I take back my invitation. See your life. It's like being invited to a party and then you say, you point out some of the dumb things that the host of the party is doing, and the host of the party goes, you know what, on second thought, you are not invited to my party. Which is why I'm saying that, Davos have turned, 2026, WEF meeting in Davos have turned into, well, a kindergarten child's play.
And pragmatic in recognizing the progress is often incremental, that interests diverge, that not every partner will share all of our values. So we're engaging broadly, strategically, with open eyes. We actively take on the world as it is, not wait around for a world we wish to be. We are calibrating our relationships so their depth reflects our values. And we're prioritizing broad engagement to maximize our influence, given the fluidity of the world at the moment, the risks that this poses, and the stakes for what comes next. And we are no longer just relying on the strength of our values, but also the value of our strength. We are building that strength at home. Since my government took office, we have cut taxes on incomes, on capital gains, and business investment. We have removed all federal barriers to interprovincial trade. We are fast-tracking $1 trillion of investments in energy, AI, critical minerals, new trade corridors, and beyond. We're doubling our defense spending by the end of this decade, and we're doing so in ways that build our domestic industries.
Yeah, I'm so playing critic on this one. Yeah. Politicians' influence, especially in a large part of Western countries, politics is heavily influenced by private interest. And because private interest is the one with the money to fund most, if not all, the promises being made by politicians. Now, because of that, most of the problems, especially hedge fund managers, hedge fund guys are the biggest problem in the world of capitalism. There. Now, here's the thing. The guys with money, most of which are coming out of the private sector, are now funding, or more like lobbying, as they call it. We call it bribe here in the US. They call it lobbying, for politicians in parliament or Congress, you know, to push certain policies that will help inflate their interest or shield their interest, the private interest. Now, what the direction that takes us to is where international law is thrown out, is thrown out the window. The case of Venezuela is an excellent and most recent example. In 2011, the biggest asset management firm, BlackRock, pointed out that nationalization of natural resources is a threat to foreign investment. That was BlackRock. In other words, don't nationalize or you'll threaten our, you know, our clients' interest, and, you know, our clients will play dirty to protect their interest if they have to. And we saw that with Anglo-Iranian Oil, a.k.a. well, BP now, with the Iran's 1953 government overthrow. And, well, recently, Nicolas Maduro. Most of the big countries' foreign policies, especially by the U.S., is heavily influenced by private interest, not international law as it should. Why? Because these operations are very expensive. And also, these private interests, they are also the one with the money to fund most of the international organizations, including the UN. Now you see the problem. See, whoever feeds you controls you. Most of the international organizations would not operate if it wasn't for the U.S. They give the largest chunk of money to run most of international organizations, including the UN. Last year, we saw the Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the UN, pointing out that unless countries that have their accounts due with their annual contribution towards the UN's operational budget, because they have the peacekeeping one and the operation, their administrative one, the one they call the general budget of they have a specific name for it. If you go back 3, 4, 5 years of the annual country's annual contribution towards the towards a regular budget, the UN's regular budget, the US is always coming up on top. In other words, the private companies are paying their dues. Private companies in the US are paying their dues to the US government. And then the US government is then using some of that money to pay their dues, their annual, obligation in terms of payment to the UN. Now you see why these guys are running around like a bunch of cowboys. Because they know they control the bread. They know they control the table. They know they are at the table. And then you have a bunch of countries, we don't want to mention any names, of course, that are at the tail end in terms of annual contribution. And they are, the contribution of UN member states, the annual contribution of UN member states, let's not even talk about the African Union when it comes to annual contribution. Boy, are we terrible. And, well, now, the thing is, countries that don't contribute the most, and these contributions are calculated based on their on a country's economic size. You can't ask Namibia to contribute $1 billion annually. Actually, that's board of peace if we're going to participate in Donald Trump's board of peace. This is more like a peace has become boring now, board of peace. The membership is renewable every 3 years. And now if you are, you know, if you want to get the premium non-renewable membership on the board of peace membership, you have to pay $1 billion. I'm not sure if that is an annual thing or it's just every 3 years, but Kenny, please.
And we are rapidly diversifying abroad. We've agreed a comprehensive strategic partnership with the EU, including joining SAFE, the European Defense Procurement Arrangements. We have signed 12 other trade and security deals on 4 continents in 6 months. In the past few days, we've concluded new strategic partnerships with China and Qatar. We're negotiating free trade pacts with India, ASEAN, Thailand, Philippines, and Mercosur. We're doing something else. To help solve global problems, we're pursuing variable geometry. In other words, different coalitions for different issues based on common values and interests. So in Ukraine, we're a core member of the Coalition of the Willing and one of the largest per capita contributors to its defense and security.
Just in case you are still waiting, he didn't mention Gaza. He didn't mention Palestine. Now you see the hypocrisy. I'll just keep coming back, but let's proceed.
Arctic sovereignty. We stand firmly with Greenland and Denmark and fully support their unique right to determine Greenland's future.
That is the part that made Donald Trump, oh, heck no! You did not just say that. Okay, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. That invitation I sent you to come and join the board of peace, I take it back. You're not welcome. The board of peace. Now, the guy in charge of the board of peace is also running a country that has the... That changed its Department of Defense its name or title from Department of Defense to Department of War. I'm telling you, kids would run international institutions way better. They're bound to break a few stuffs here and there, but the adults that are in charge right now, I've lost hope. All right, moving on.
Our commitment to NATO's Article 5 is unwavering. So we're working with our NATO allies, including the Nordic Baltic 8, to further secure the alliance's northern and western flanks, including through Canada's unprecedented investments in over-the-horizon radar, in submarines, in aircraft, and boots on the ground, boots on the ice. Canada strongly opposes tariffs over Greenland and calls for focused talks to achieve our shared objectives of security and prosperity in the Arctic. On plurilateral trade, we're championing efforts to build a bridge between the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the European Union, which would create a new trading bloc of 1.5 billion people. On critical minerals, we're forming buyers clubs anchored in the G7 so that the world can diversify away from concentrated supply. And on AI, we're cooperating with like-minded democracies to ensure that we won't ultimately be forced to choose between hegemons and hyperscalers. This is not naive multilateralism, nor is it relying on their institutions. It's building coalitions that work, issues by issue, with partners who share enough common ground to act together. In some cases, this will be the vast majority of nations. What it's doing is creating a dense web of connections across trade, investment, culture, on which we can draw for future challenges and opportunities. Argue the middle powers must act together because if we're not at the table, we're on the menu.
Yeah, that was just making fun of Anthony Blinken. But Yeah, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. Yeah, that is true. From the look of things, that's how, international law operates. Actually, international law does not operate much, especially in the 21st century. Especially now, because, we'll wrap this up with, we'll wrap this up with the board, with the board of peace, or what I'm calling the board of peace. We'll wrap it up with that. And why I slightly agree with the guys that have reached the conclusion that are we looking at the coup d'etat of the United Nations being toppled out of its international position and more like a replacement. But that's going to be a very tough replacement considering its exclusivity and it's insanely overpriced in terms of membership, a permanent membership. But we'll be there in a few.
But I'd also say that great powers can afford for now to go it alone. They have the market size, the military capacity, and the leverage to dictate terms. Middle powers do not. But when we only negotiate bilaterally with a hegemon, we negotiate from weakness. We accept what's offered. We compete with each other to be the most accommodating. This is not sovereignty. It's the performance of sovereignty while accepting subordination.
Yeah. If you are negotiating with a hegemony, aka someone who is having a strong military or economic position or economic stance, you accept what's being, there's a perfect phrase for that. Beggars can't be choosers. Beggars can't be choosers. In other words, if you have strong political position, military position, economic position, you can just put in that agreement all kinds of terms that you want. Who is going to stand against you? The guy who is coming to negotiate with you is coming in desperation mode. What are they going to do? Say no and then go home and starve? Or they'll just take what you're offering and then suffer the consequences later? Because they're bound to come, consequences are bound to come. All actions have consequences. You can ignore it, but, you can decide. The only power we have is deciding not to act. Otherwise, to avoid consequences, don't act. Because if you act, the consequences are going to come by default. Good actions come with good consequences. You can't do something bad and say, you know what? I want good consequences. No, that's not how the world works. Good actions, good consequences. Terrible actions, terrible consequences. Consequence.
In a world of great power rivalry, the countries in between have a choice. Compete with each other for favor or to combine to create a third path with impact.
When Jai Shankar, who is the Indian foreign minister, was asked why India joined BRICS, his answer was simple. Well, we wanted to join, was that the G7 they wanted to join, and they were not welcome because, again, exclusivity. The very same exclusivity that the Board of Peace is beginning to portray. This is an organization that was just made public, when was that, last year, November? And the whole thing changed to the point where it's looking like they were just swindling the United Nations into recognizing it. I think the UN is trying to do it. You all better be doing damage control on that one because, boy, Donald Trump really, 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 and his homies really played you. Now, those are not the words that I thought I was going to put in one sentence, like Donald Trump and playing you. Like, if you're going to be played by someone, at least let it not be Donald Trump. But for the UN and the Board of Peace, it's beginning to look like it was Donald Trump that played them. Not a very good statement to be said to you.
We shouldn't allow the rise of hard power to blind us to the fact that the power of legitimacy, integrity, and rules will remain strong if we choose to wield them together. Which brings me back to Havel. What does it mean for middle powers to live the truth? Well, first, it means naming reality, Stop invoking rules-based international order as though it still functions as advertised. Call it what it is, a system of intensifying great power rivalry where the most powerful pursue their interests using economic integration as coercion. It means acting consistently, applying the same standards to allies and rivals. When middle powers criticize economic intimidation from one direction but stay silent when it comes from another, we are keeping the sign in the window. It means building what we claim to believe in. Rather than waiting for the old order to be restored, it means creating institutions and agreements that function as described. And it means reducing the leverage that enables coercion. That's building a strong domestic economy. It should be every government's immediate priority. And diversification internationally is not just economic prudence. It's a material foundation for honest foreign policy, because countries earn the right to principled stands by reducing their vulnerability to retaliation. So Canada. Canada has what the world wants.
Yeah, that is actually what any country would say. Namibia has what the world wants. Now, that speech is making headlines. And that's just the... that was not even all of it. Actually, it was just the... I got the parts I wanted. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. Oh, I like that part. Because when I heard that part, I went straight to the Munich Security Conference of 2024. I'm like, I've heard this word before. I swear that this word sounds very familiar. And turns out the former Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, and Biden uttered those words. Now, was he wrong? Oh, no, he wasn't. He was telling the truth. And is Angelina Jolie wrong when she said that the notion she had in mind when she went into service of the humanitarians in the humanitarian space was that you know what, it's not a perfect system, but I think we can make it work because we are going to adhere to the rules that are written that we all are bound to follow. And then it took her 20 years. And found out that actually that's not the case. There are rules that apply to those ones, but not those ones. There are benefits that apply to those ones, but not those ones. And there are consequences with regards to breaking international law that apply to those ones, but not those ones when, in her exact words, business interests are involved. In other words, follow the money. Let's take a break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to Eagle FM, Helmut. Dwight, Homran, thank you for tuning in. Now, on the 17th of November, the UN put up this very awesome article on their website. That takes us into a conclusion now. We have 8 minutes left. Security Council authorizes International Stabilization Force in Gaza, adopting Resolution 2803. That's the UN resolution that gave birth to the Board of War, Board of Peace, sorry. The Security Council today, 17 November now, 2025. The Security Council today endorsed the United States-backed comprehensive plan to end the Gaza conflict. Are you kidding me? Who have been supplying the guns that have led to the conflict? The U.S. That's like me setting someone's house on fire, and then the fire department comes to me and go like, you know what? We trust you to go and put off that fire. Now, as the owner of the house, you would be understandably irritated. But from the look of things, that's what's going on here. Oh, boy. I can only imagine what a conundrum this is for the UN. Yeah. Then they went on to point out, The Security Council, UN Security Council, everyone on the UN Security Council voted for the creation of this institution, except for two members, China and Russia. They abstained. Why they did not veto it is beyond me, because they had that power. And they just decided, you know what, stay out of it, you know. Now, the UN Security Council endorsed the United States-backed comprehensive plan to end the Gaza conflict. They welcomed its establishment of the Board of Peace and authorized the board and member states working with it to establish temporary international stabilization force in Gaza. Adopting Resolution 2803, 2025 to be issued as a document. And there is a whole document with that. By the vote of 13 in favor to none against, with two abstaining. That's Russia and China. Now, the council also authorized the board and member states participating therein to enter arrangements necessary to achieve the comprehensive plan's objectives and establish the operational entities to this end. Yeah, except when the charter now came out. That's when I imagine a bunch of guys at UN went like, what have we done? Because that charter gives the chairperson, the guy chairing the Board of Peace, you can guess who that is. Of course, it's Trump. A lot of power, not just in running the organization, but also in appointing and basically, you know, admitting and kicking out of members, and also deciding who takes over almost single-handedly if he's, you know, kicks out. And the amendment of the charter itself is a serious pain in the neck. This charter was drafted by someone who the Americans should really worry about, because if that guy finds themselves in office, they have a dictator on their hands. This is a dictatorship 101. This document is a full-on dictatorship mode. Especially Article 10. That deals with the dissolution. But let's just go there. And the time is finishing. Okay, I'm also hungry, so I have to go. So, Article 3.2. Hey. Chairman, Article 3.2a, Donald J. Trump shall serve as inaugural chairman of the Board of Peace and shall separately serve as an inaugural representative of the United States of America, subject only to the provision of Chapter 3. What does Chapter 3 say, I wonder? What does Chapter 3 say? Governance, the Board of Peace. The Board of Peace consists of member states that are, so far only 20-something have been invited. And I think they are now, that number is declining. And only a few of them showed up to the signing. And Canada is not going to be given audience from the look of things, not after that speech, criticizing the Board of Peace chairman. Plans to take over Greenland. That's the world we live in, ladies and gentlemen. And may I remind you that a bunch of guys that are making dumb decisions like this all went to private school. Some of them, you know, did have PhDs. And, very educated guys. For those of you that like to say, you know what, let's just have educated people in office. Yeah, well, I'm not saying let's not. I'm just saying it does not work as much as you think it does. But before we sign out, let's take a live read. Almost committed murder. The University of Namibia informs students that online hostel registration for 2026 opened on the 12th of January and will run until 27 February 2026. Only students who applied for residence and received official placement confirmation may register online. Access to hostel will not be granted without proof of residence registration. Students placed on waiting list may be considered if spaces become available. For assistance, students are advised to contact their respective residence offices. Now, what the Canadian Prime Minister is pointing out is that for 80 years, a lot of countries that have been homies, that have been cozy with the hegemony, you know, with the U.S. hegemony, have been forced to turn a blind eye to a lot of violations of international law by the hegemonic power to protect their interest.
At ShopRite, our low price promise is to always help you save when you need it most. Make every dollar count this January and save big on deals like 500 grams Polana elbow, macaroni or spaghetti pasta, only 13 Namibian dollars 99 each. And 1 kg nice rice, medium grain for just 26 Namibian dollars 99. Don't miss out. Visit your nearest ShopRite and save more this January. Offers valid until 25 January 2026. ShopRite. Lower prices you can trust. Always.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. For a very long time, that a lot of countries that were cozy with the hegemonic power were enjoying the advantages that came with them keeping their mouth shut. Or to use the example of the Canadian Prime Minister, McKenney, that as long as they kept their sign up, they were good. Now that it's coming to bite them, this has a lot of Greenland written all over it. If it wasn't for that, I don't think they would be saying things like that. Like they say, one day they came for, you know, they came for that one and you kept quiet. They came for me, you kept quiet. Now they are here for you. All of a sudden you are screaming. Yeah, well, keep quiet. You know, you were not screaming when they were taking someone else. Now that they are taking you, all of a sudden you have something to say. All of a sudden, let's rally together. Huh. Why the change of side all of a sudden?
Well, it's because, if they're threatening Greenland, it's just a matter of time before they look at their neighbor and go like, huh, yum, yum, yum.
But that brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until Monday, because today is Friday, until Monday, but we'll still, of course, meet again on Sunday where I'm playing DJ and talking about, mostly about the whole divorce thing and how we should look on the bright side for those of you that went through the divorce, how we should look through, you know, on the bright side with Valentine's Day coming. You have, you know, I'm sure one or two of you have a bestie here and there who can just come in and help through these difficult times. That's what one thing besties are known for. They're always there for you through difficult times including divorce. I made that joke in, you know, I made that joke in front of one friend of mine who actually went through a divorce and was like, Helmut, that's not funny. I went through that. It took an emotional toll on me. Like, honey, it's supposed to be a joke. You're supposed to laugh, you know. She still didn't laugh. You know, I was just, you know, she's still traumatized, but don't worry. You know, it's like making, you know, it's like making financial jokes with me in January. It's not funny. It will be funny next week, Friday. Until then, it's really not funny. So with that, you all have a good weekend. Be safe out there. Stay away from people's, girlfriends, boyfriends, wives, husbands. Unless you have made a ménage à trois arrangement, then, who am I to judge? Until Monday, you all have a blessed weekend.